Now on to our bloggers roundtable. As if that light-skinned Libra's party hasn't raised enough ruckus, the internal color line in the community is on the radar again. BET had Barack Obama and journalist Soledad O'Brien on air to take on the light versus dark skin debate. Plus, we have a story about nine black teens allegedly dragging a white woman off a bus and beating her badly. Was that a hate crime? With us is Lauren Williams, editor of the blog Stereohyped, also novelist and screenwriter Trey Ellis. He blogs for The Huffington Post and teaches film at Columbia University, and Dwayne Brayboy writes the blog Black Informant. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you for having me.
Hi.
So let's go to this BET issue. There's a Meet the Faith program, Dr. Ian Smith hosts, and the topic recently was what it means to be black. He had Barack Obama, Soledad O'Brien. Do light-skinned blacks have an easier life than dark-skinned blacks? That was a topic. Lauren, does this seem like a tired debate, or is this important to still talk about?
It seems like it should be a tired debate, and it seems like it should be something that we don't need to talk about anymore. But you mentioned the light-skinned Libra Party earlier. It's obviously something that is still around, and, you know, whoever was throwing that party didn't even realize there was anything wrong with it until he got this huge outcry. So obviously, color issues are always going to be there in the black community, and I don't really think there's anything wrong with bringing it up and talking about it and having a dialogue, because even if, you know, issues aren't coming up every day, it's still something that most black people were raised with and something that we deal with all the time.
Dwayne, do you agree with the premise that light-skinned people really do have it better than dark-skinned people?
Actually, no, I do not, because basically if you're black in America, you're black in America. That's it. And as far as the answer to your first question, yes, this is a very very tired conversation, because this is a one of those issues that's been both beat up and towed down by black folks since slavery, and it's nothing new really that we can learn from it. I think the debate in recent years has had its share of dishonesty, because in other words, in many cases, it's just like you said, it's this thought that if you're light-skinned, you have a free ride in life versus dark-skinned people, well, we're just damned to the life of Kunta. You know, yes, skin tone does often play a role in things such as entertainment, politics, and business. But for most black Americans like myself, you know, it's factors beyond skin tone that greatly plays into our successes and failures. You know, honestly, I rarely come across everyday black folk in my own neck of the woods that have deep conversations about this kind of stuff.
Now, Trey, Barack Obama said people never question his blackness until he ran for president. Do you think that there's a greater scrutiny as you move up the ladder? Is it something that maybe folks don't have to deal with most of the time on the day-to-day, but when you reach a certain level, it's under the microscope?
Well, I think he's being a little disingenuous. I think his books are about his quest to embrace African American is black American is someone who's a half Kansan, half Kenyan. So I think that it's always been a struggle for him. And we know that race is a fiction. It's a mix of culture and hue. Obama's career, moving to Chicago, becoming a grassroots organizer, I think has been testament to that person who made a conscious choice to join black Americans like me, whose parents have and grandparents and great-great-grandparents are of slave descent and came from this country.
All right, Trey, I want to move us on. Keep us on skin color a bit. There's a controversial song that's been getting a lot of attention in the blogosphere and elsewhere. Some people think it's funny. Others are totally offended. You be the judge.
Sometimes I feel
I wish I was white, so I could feel just how it feels to be treated right. I'm not ashamed of me. Just one time I wanna see how it feels to be treated equally.
Okay, that song is from Alan Waddy and Irvin Lee. Waddy writes on his website that the song is not meant to be taken literally, but he wants to send a message about race and equality. Do you buy that, Trey?
I mean, of course, it's explicitly being provocative. It's like the Read a Book campaign on BET. He knows exactly what he's doing when he wrote that song, and even the after the refrain, he explains the joke. There's a problem, I think, in the black community of of taking everything literally and being ready for a fight, ready to be offended before the offense even arises. He's certainly, and his other songs as well, are all political, satirical songs. That's what he does.
Well, you know what? We are going to continue this discussion after the break, but I want to play you, before we go, another song. In the late 1920s, Louis Armstrong sang this show tune, "What Did I Do to Be So Black and Blue?" Let's take a listen.
I'm white inside, but that don't help my case, 'cause I can't hide what is in my bed.
All right, Dwayne, Lauren, and Trey, we are going to take a quick break. Coming up, we've got more from our bloggers. We've been talking with Lauren Williams, Dwayne Brayboy, and Trey Ellis.
What did I do to be so black and blue?
I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We're talking about whether or not black people want to be white. That's on our bloggers' roundtable. We've got Lauren Williams, editor of the blog Stereohyped, novelist and screenwriter Trey Ellis, he blogs for the Huffington Post, and Dwayne Brayboy, who writes the blog Black Informant. So welcome back, folks. We played a little bit of Sometimes I Wish I Were White, which is a highly criticized new song, and the 1920s hit by Louis Armstrong, What Did I Do to Be So Black and Blue? Now, Lauren, is this in a way a double standard that this new song is getting so highly criticized when the same themes came up in the past and it wasn't quite as controversial?
I don't think it's a double standard. I mean, a lot of things that happened in 1920 don't translate to 2007, but I also feel like there's, you know, a lot of the criticism that's being aimed at this song is not sort of unfounded. I think this guy is just trying to make some social commentary. And, you know, like was said before, I think it's being taken a little bit too literally.
Dwayne, do you think this is too literal, or is it honest? Is it exploitative?
I think the two people that the two other guests that just said what they said, I totally agree with both of them. I think it's both being taken very literal, and it's meant to be very provocative. And I especially like what Trey said regarding how it does seem like a lot of times we as black people, we're automatically on that defense mode. And something like this is really, when I listened to it, I mean, it didn't send me in my bedroom sobbing like, oh, Lord, why did you make me black? I wish, you know, I didn't go through any of that. You know, this was just a song. It was social commentary. And I just treated it, I mean, honestly, the clip that you played, the sample of the song, that's probably as much as I heard it, because I was like, okay, this is commentary, and let me move on to something else. Let me check my Yahoo account or something, you know, so that's about it, you know.
Well, Dwayne, I want to move us on to another story. It's out of Baltimore. A 26-year-old woman says she tried to take a seat on a bus and several middle school-age kids told her she couldn't. She told police that the kids jumped her, and according to the Maryland Transit Administration police, you have a situation where there were several kids, 14 to 15 years old. The victim is white. She was beaten pretty badly. She suffered broken bones in her left eye socket, lacerations on top of her head. Now, the question that's coming up among many is this a hate crime? What do you think?
Is this a hate? Well, they're still kind of trying to figure that out. I mean, obviously we weren't there, but from the witnesses on the victim's own account, this, you know, she said that they were calling her white cracker and then something else they called her as well. So if we were to use the black standard, so to speak, yeah, it is a hate crime, you know. But again, you have to let the law do its thing, you know. But what I found very interesting about this whole thing was I said, you know what, let me go on YouTube. And I just did a simple search of videos that were done for regarding the Gina 6. And out of those videos, I came up with 1,430 pages of videos talking about Gina 6 and how bad it was and all that. And as far as this young lady, Sarah Craig, is concerned, I only found two videos. Now, mind you, YouTube is just a reflection of what people want to know about. So this is really, this whole case is once again proven to be a big slap in the face of everybody who's out there crying for justice and wanting increased hate crimes. Because you know what? All this crying for hate crimes is going to want, it's just like the anti-drug laws, it's going to come right back and it's going to slap black folks right in the behind.
So you think that basically the hate crime law is going to be applied in a way that hurts black people?
I'm saying that the hate crime law, once if we're going to raise that kind of standard, then black folks are going to have to be prepared that there are black people out there, yes, that do crime based on hate and racism, just like white people do. So it's going to that sword goes either way.
Lauren, if you go to some folks and you know, people on college campuses, people in the barbershop, they'll say, black people can't be racist. Racism is an institutional structure. You cannot be racist if you are a person of color. How does that parse out for you?
Well, I think saying black people can definitely hate people based on their race. And I think that a lot of black people hate white people, and I don't really think that's even up for debate that there are black people who hate white people. And I think that if this crime only happened because this woman was white and trying to sit down on the bus, then I do think that it's a hate crime. On the same hand, I wonder if there's not going to be a little bit of racial subtext that you can find in a lot of black on white crimes that, you know, I think it's a slippery slope.
Now, Trey, there are actually very few black on white crimes. A lot more is black on black crimes and, of course, white on white crimes. But the cases of black on white crime get a ton of publicity. In fact, if you are someone who is a black man who rapes a white woman or a black murderer of a white person, there are actually much stiffer penalties than people get for doing these things within race. Is it possible to really investigate something like this for local police or people who are, you know, looking from the armchair and not bring your own biases to the table?
That's always going to be a problem. And I think the issue of a hate crime is an interesting one because I'm not a lawyer, but I would say that a hate crime is a hate crime if the act is premeditated. I think in the middle of the fury of some violent act against someone, while you're kicking them, you say, you short person, you whatever you are, I think that's different than setting out on purpose to find anybody of that race, or they come into your neighborhood and you attack them specifically because of their race. I just want to talk about the larger issue, though, in this case, is the legion of African-American middle schoolers we have that are just lost, that have been poisoned by cynicism and despair, and that we're failing. If you see them coming out of school, I see them, you know, at 3:30 when they're coming out of school, we are failing legions of them. And I think that's the bigger issue. The issue, mm-hmm. It's not just here. It's also gangs of girls in the New York City subway systems that are beating up girls. It's a huge, huge problem that we need to address that goes well beyond this case.
All right. We have to unfortunately wrap it up there, but this is a big issue and we will certainly keep following it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with novelist and screenwriter Trey Ellis. He blogs for the Huffington Post and teaches film at Columbia University. Also, Lauren Williams, she edits the blog Stereohyped, and both were at our New York studios. Also talking to Dwayne Brayboy of the blog Black Informant. He was at member station KUCI in Irvine, California. You can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org. And be sure to know the conversation does not stop here. Our online series, Speak Your Mind, gives you a chance to sound off on the issues that you care about. To find out how, go to our blog, nprnewsandviews.org, and click on Speak Your Mind.